Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Amy Wilson. Amy Wilson is a tech executive, board member, investor, CEO advisor, mentor, and podcaster. As an executive at SAP and Workday, Amy led large global teams through complex transformations and scaled businesses to new heights. She specializes in identifying unmet needs, setting compelling visions, and inspiring team members and stakeholders to rally together and deliver exceptional results. This leadership mindset has allowed Amy to create value for customers, deliver significant revenue impact, and make work a more rewarding experience for those she leads. Amy is currently advising CEOs in the HR and work tech spaces on product strategy, mentoring up-and-coming leaders, and co-hosting the podcast, The Meg and Amy Show, where she and Meg Bear, who was the first ever guest on Speech Bubbles, explore topics of leadership, AI, tech, and the future of work. Amy says, "When you think abundantly, others' success means your success. It means that you face possibilities rather than constraints. It means that there's room for everyone to thrive." Amy Wilson, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte. What a pleasure to join you today.
It's lovely to have you with us. So, Amy, that idea that other people's success means your success is so generous. Was it an idea that was hard to come by for you, or have you always been motivated by abundant thinking?
I would say that it was instilled in me at a very early age. So going back to my teens when I played sports, and I was never the best athlete, but I was a really good player coach, or an exceptional player coach. I found that I was quite gifted in terms of getting others to be motivated, to believe in themselves, to achieve athletically in a way that they never thought possible for themselves. And I got so much joy and satisfaction out of seeing others succeed in that way. And that really kind of set the course, I would say, for my thinking, for my life.
So what was your sport?
Well, I had many sports. I had soccer, I had track, I had basketball, golf kind of, but I was too bad of a player to even be a player coach at golf. So that one didn't really count.
I really like the idea of a player coach, because I think that there's some players on a team who are the stars and they're always going for the baskets or the goals or that end because they are physically and athletically built for that kind of stardom. And then there are other players who pull everybody together and coach and mentor other people. So I really love that sports metaphor as an idea for leadership. Now, in your podcast, The Meg and Amy Show, you are talking to some of the biggest thought leaders in AI and in HR tech. What's something that you've learned that's been either a surprise or an aha moment for you with all the wonderful people you've been talking to?
I don't know if it's a surprise per se, but it has been very heartening to have leaders on our show that I really consider to be role models and to be excellent leaders in the face of difficult circumstances, right? So that's been a really great joy and a very satisfying turn of events. So it's been fun to be able to bring leaders to others and be able to showcase what good leadership looks like.
Yeah, that's such a great opportunity. And I've heard you two say that you have a section on the podcast called the Leadership Corner. And I've heard you two say that that's an extremely popular segment of your podcast. And obviously, this is a leadership podcast, and I've just written a leadership book. What do you think it is about leadership that attracts and engages us so much?
I think there's two things. So the first is that we pay leaders well. So people are incented to become leaders and to achieve leadership roles because they're going to be paid better. They're going to have an uplift in their identity. They're going to be rewarded for it. So we have baked in incentives in this world to be a leader. And then secondly, leadership is hard. It's certainly not for everyone. It doesn't come naturally for most people. There's a lot of nuances. There's a lot of complications. It's hard to think about other people and yourself and everything around you all at the same time. So having constant reminders, having specific examples and specific advice is crucial because we get caught in our own stories, in our own narratives, in our own stresses, and it's hard to come out of those. And so having it in our Leadership Corner segment, we just take one particular question from an audience member and answer that and talk through scenarios accordingly. And so it's really just helpful to have, you know, something very specific to chew on.
I think leadership is chewy. And possibly a third thing to add is that we've also all been led. And not always by great leaders. Like a great leader might come around once or twice in your career as a team member, if you're lucky. So we've also been burnt by mediocre or less great leadership. So that probably is also why leadership is so fascinating to us as humans.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I would hope that people listening to the show felt like I was a good leader for them if they experienced me and looked to me as a role model and like my advice. I mean, that's really what I hope for, is that's how I'm seen and how people see me, right?
Well, I'm sure if you make that as your intention as a leader, then that probably is the case in terms of how you're seen. Now, I'm really interested in the genesis of Meg and Amy, because you describe yourself as two best friends. Now, for those of you who don't know you, what brought the two of you together?
Yeah, so we started working together at PeopleSoft in 2004, I think. So a few years ago, I was the product strategy manager for time and labor, and Meg was the development director for that product, time and labor, as well as a couple of other products. And we worked fairly closely together. We really couldn't stand each other at first. So Meg is an acquired taste, we say.
Yeah.
I mean, immediately wonderful taste. But Meg
so likable.
No. So we had our skirmishes at first, but pretty quickly we really saw, first of all, real value and strengths in each other. So that mutual respect. And we also quickly saw that we both had really good intentions, that we meant well, and we had very similar values in terms of leadership and business and trust and accountability, and all of those things really lined up very well. And so then when Oracle acquired PeopleSoft, we found ourselves in a different configuration, working even more closely together. I was leading strategy for talent management, and Meg was running development for talent management. So we were two peas in a pod, leading our teams together. So we really thought of our two teams as being one giant team and led that way. So that was really, really super fun. And then I left Oracle, and Meg left Oracle, and many years later we rejoined at SAP. And that's a really kind of fun story too, is that I hired Meg. So for a very short amount of time, Meg worked for me. But as is the case in general, I believe I always work for Meg. She told me what to do, and I do it. And so she worked for me for a short time. And then about 6 months in, we actually reversed roles, which is highly unusual. Wow. And especially in this masculine energy world, very few people would be willing to step down and reverse roles with their boss. But that is something that I did, and it was the best thing I ever did. So ultimately, I was able to hire in my boss, which was Meg, get her trained up, and then I reported to her after that.
You know, Amy, that's such a beautiful story. And as you say, it would probably never happen in that very kind of alpha masculine style of leadership. But you knew you trusted her. You knew she was brilliant. You knew she could do the job. You knew the two of you are peas in a pod. So, and you knew it was going to be a great decision both for you and for the team. So it was super smart of you.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone was like, I didn't know people could do that. I didn't know that was possible.
And what's the genesis of the podcast?
Oh, Meg, of course. Meg told me we needed to do it, so I said, okay.
And are you two having fun?
Yes, yes, we're having lots of fun. We have different work styles, of course. So I drive her crazy with my last minute preparation, but otherwise it's been a real joy.
Fabulous. So you've talked about leading in a lot of the world's largest tech companies. And I'm interested to learn a little bit about your leadership journey in terms of when you were first a leader, how you grew accustomed to leading, what you learned about yourself along the way.
Mm-hmm. When I was at Arthur Andersen, so I'm really dating myself, right after college, I was 23 years old, and I was given responsibility for our temp workers. And so essentially I was the manager of a group of temp workers. And I found really early on the power of inclusion, of appreciation, and decent pay. So I created this set of very loyal, very hardworking temps. And I just got, again, so much enjoyment out of seeing them, come in very kind of nervous and lowly, and then feeling very confident and just mowing through work and having a lot of fun doing it. So that was a really important moment for me to believe in myself, my own leadership, and to see other people thrive. So that was early on. I then moved from Arthur Andersen to PeopleSoft. So I began my tech journey pretty early. And I had very few female role models, or I had no female role models. I would say that generally speaking, in my early career, I would see a lot of successful women, but they were maybe harsh, hard driving. It did not look good. But fortunately, I had a number of male leaders and male role models at the time, so in my 20s. And they were, you know, confident but humble. They mixed joy and hard work. They asked for a lot, but they cared about their people. And they encouraged me to speak up, to lead teams early on. They believed in me. So this was a really key moment. And then it wasn't until I was 30 that I met a female leader that was a true role model. And so that wasn't PeopleSoft. That was Jenny Lehman. She was the head of product strategy for HCM at PeopleSoft at the time.
A big gig.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, wow, that's the job that I want in the future. And she had it all. She was so smart and set great visions and was really into her people and supported them. And she was married and had a great balanced life, had kids, et cetera. You know, it was just, I was like, wow, that's who I want to be. That's what I want to be. And so that was a huge moment. So it wasn't until I was 30. And fortunately, I did have a lot of help and support from male leaders up until that point. But that was when things, I would say, really took off.
Yeah, it's lovely to have that role model. Actually, I mean, you said not until you were 30. For me, that feels quite early. Because I didn't find female role models till I was well into my 40s. So
wow.
I think it's quite mm-hmm. astonishing.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about, even in your very first management role, understanding that inclusion helped people feel supported and engaged in their roles. And you took on more and more senior roles with bigger and bigger teams. How would you describe your leadership style now?
Well, I really, so many things. So first of all, I like to set a vision and encourage people to come together to meet that vision, right? So I kind of start with that vision. I really focus on being encouraging and listening. So whether it's, you know, my very own team or it's my extended team or it's like the broader team. And so when I would, you know, travel to different countries to visit employees and so on, I would always set up, you know, little lunches with individual contributors to learn more about them, for them to meet each other and to talk to each other and to share their stories and to ask them questions. And that's really important to me, to make people feel like they matter and they have a voice. The other thing, and this was a little bit later. So this was at SAP. I've always cared about team dynamics and getting my team together and understanding each other's strengths and appreciating those strengths. But I was finding that my leadership team was really kind of siloed and, you know, running their own operations, their own strategies, et cetera, and weren't necessarily feeling like they were a team. And so I brought in a group called the Table Group, which was founded by Patrick, and I'm going to butcher this name, Lencioni, Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. And we had a really great consultant, Brian Jones, from the Table Group, spend a bunch of time with my leadership team to really coalesce, to come together as a leadership group, to you know, get really specific about appreciating each other's strengths and leveraging each other's strengths, and so on. And my team members said that they felt much different before versus after, and that was a huge leap forward, I think, for me as a leader and then just my team as well. You mentioned already the other success is my success. And I would even almost say that I'm ruthlessly non-competitive.
Yeah.
So everybody talks about being competitive and, you know, I'm competitive in a kind of an external fashion, but I really, really am not competitive with my peers and certainly not my team members. And that can be a little bit surprising. And it takes a little while to get people to realize that I really am not competing with them, but, I'm not. And then the last thing is that I just really make sure to be quite lighthearted and find opportunities to laugh with the team. So I felt like, you know, every day, every time that we met, it was important to laugh. And yeah. I don't mean like bringing up jokes or anything like that, but just whatever absurd situation or whatever, you know, making sure that it's not all heavy all the time.
Yeah, I'm just reflecting back what I'm hearing. So I heard about individual storytelling, encouraging people to share their narratives, recognizing when a team wasn't gelling and finding a way to fix that, being ruthlessly non-competitive and finding moments to laugh. And I wanted to ask you about the role of empathy, because I'm currently having a very friendly argument with one of my very dear friends about the role of empathy in leadership, because she says, in your book, Charlotte, and in your podcast, you found a bunch of fantastic leaders who employ empathy because of their diverse backgrounds and their diverse identities, the obstacles they've been through. They're naturally empathetic, but empathy is not a skill generally valued in the world for leaders. And I still disagree. I mean, we may come across the odd individual who doesn't understand that empathy has a role in leadership. But where do you stand? I just feel it's not binary. It's not an either or.
I think empathy is crucial. So I'm in your camp, Charlotte.
Thank you for being in my camp. I feel vindicated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes. You have to consider their contexts. You have to consider their strengths, because invariably they're going to have different backgrounds. They're going to have different strengths. They're going to have different worries than you are going to have. Like, it doesn't matter if you have very on paper similar backgrounds and everything, there's still so much diversity between people, and you have to be able to see others for who they are and why they are, in order to motivate them, in order to enable them to thrive. Because if you're just inserting your point of view, your worldview, and telling people what to do, they're not going to deliver in the same way. And they're certainly not going to build the confidence that you need as a leader for them to have to be able to drive results.
Yeah, and you've built product. I mean, if you're building product for individual users to use, there has to be an element of empathy in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I remember at Workday, we did a whole exercise with our customer at the time, and I think they're still a Workday customer, Intuit. And we did a session on, it was a design thinking session, and we developed empathy for Darth Vader. So that was, you know, that was on one end of the spectrum, right? But it was really important to be able to, again, understand context and history and background and motivation in order to, you know, ultimately design a product for Darth Vader.
Yes, and that is, I guess, empathy is the absolutely central tenet of design thinking, is that you have to develop a persona and build empathy for them so you can build a product in their direction.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, Amy, you've been a very senior leader at large global companies, undeniably also a woman, and you did mention diversity. What does diversity mean to you both as an individual and as a leader?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to strengths. So I believe that, everyone brings different strengths to the table, and we really need to appreciate and leverage each other's strengths. And this is again, it's hard. It's hard to do that because, as I've led other people, I can see them falling down the trap of, well, that person isn't going to make it because they don't have these strengths. And when they say these strengths, they mean my strengths. But you need to take a step back and say, oh, but actually they have these other strengths and those aren't my strengths. But it would be awfully nice if I could tap into those strengths, right? So it's very rare that you're going to come across a peer or an employee or whoever who has nothing going for them, right? And so, really uncovering what it is that they bring to the table, what their special gifts are, what they're particularly motivated by, what sort of opinions and perspectives that they have that can disrupt the status quo. So, being able to tap into those things is not, I wouldn't say it's like crucial or critical, but instead it's something more like miraculous, right? It allows you to get to a whole different level of personal satisfaction, of delivering business results, of tapping into human potential.
And you're speaking as a true player coach when you say that. To take us back to what you said at the beginning.
One other thing about diversity in terms of what that means. So that was from kind of the perspective of bringing the best out of others. But the other thing I think that is really crucial is to remember that always that you are a role model and that you are providing representation and to help others recognize that they're role modeling and they're providing representation too. And that is not just underrepresented leaders, but even like, my male leaders, my white male leaders, by for them to be able to bring these kinds of qualities to leadership, that's also role modeling. So kind of back to, my early days when I did have male leaders and role models that were supporting me and encouraging me, that was really critical too. And so, it's not just female leaders, not just underrepresented leaders, but white male leaders as well, can provide that role modeling and representation too.
Yeah, I love that. That for me, that goes really deep because you had that beautiful experience of having really generous male leaders who role modeled an exceptional leadership to you. And then you were able to do the same for men who reported up to you. And it's not just about role modeling that underrepresented minorities or people from different identities can be leaders, but you were role modeling. Yes, you too, as a white male leader, can be an empathetic leader. You can be an understanding leader. You can be an inclusive leader. So it's role modeling types of behaviors that and showing that those are acceptable in leadership, which I think is actually the true transformation work. It's real transformation. It's not just talking about diversity this, equity that, inclusivity that. It's the actually how you change cultures. Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Amy. So, as you know, I'm always thinking about and talking about reputation. How do you think about your own reputation?
I was having a conversation with a mentee a few months back, and She was moving from being an individual contributor to a leader and getting a little bit frustrated with her lack of traction. And it wasn't, she was moving into being more of an influential leader. So not so much a team, but really having to drive change and transformation with peers and so on. And we needed to get her to shift her mindset a little bit. And that was, instead of being the subject matter expert and forcing her her knowledge and her expertise down people's throats, was to really step back and think about, you know, how do I bring value to others? How do I serve other people? How do I better understand what they need and how I can help them? And it sounds like a very subtle shift, but it's a really big change in your mindset. And again, this is something that I would say came rather naturally to me based on my earlier experiences, but it is still something that you have to practice and you have to keep in your mind. And it was a bit of a light bulb for her. And you can see that, because when you're an individual contributor, what you're trying to do is you're trying to build up your expertise, you're trying to build up your knowledge. And that's the reputation that you're building, is that you know things and you can get things done. But if you're trying to build your reputation as a leader, you really need to be able to showcase how much value you bring to other people. And the value that you bring to other people is not just your expertise and your knowledge. It's actually how much you make a difference for other people. And again, it's kind of a subtle thing, but it's really important. And so for me, making sure that people believe I bring value to them is key. And the other thing is likability. So this has been a little bit, you know, in the internet sphere, as, you know, is likability an important quality in a leader? And I think it is. Actually, so I think likability is very important, because it means that people believe that you care about their needs, about what they are trying to accomplish, and it's not just about you. And so there's this great book called The Likeable Badass. I don't know if you've heard of that book. And, you know, making sure that you're likable and you're a badass. So certainly you need to be able to get shit done. You need to be able to, you know, bring the results, all that kind of stuff. But it's not enough to just be a badass. You do need to be likable as well.
Yeah, because I think likable respects the humanity of others. If you're just a badass, you're just going for goals and others can fall away on the sidelines. It doesn't really matter. So I do enjoy that. So Amy, the big thing for me in terms of leadership and how we're shifting it is that we've slightly got stuck with a certain archetype of what a leader is in our brains. We kind of, it's almost instinctive. It's almost our neuroscience. It's kind of not cognitive, but it's, We feel and we believe that leadership is loud and it's room owning and it has a big energy. And for me, and very much reflected in our conversation today, I'm seeing that we need to change that archetype and accept different shades and different shapes of leadership. So what do you think we can do collectively and individually to shift that archetype in our brains and accept new ways of leaders?
Well, first off, I would say that we need to celebrate early and often when we see the good kind. And that means outwardly, publicly. It means when you see one of the leaders on your team exhibit that kind of inclusive, kind, collaborative, listening type of leadership, reward them, praise them, tell others about it. It's, you know, we need to tell these stories. We need to celebrate and bring people along. And then back to the role modeling, right? So always remember that you're a role model, and you yourself, and that you are creating role models, right? So how do we create as many role models as possible and celebrate them and share them?
Yeah, it's so lovely, because that word role model, along with mentor and sponsor, they kind of just slip off our tongues very easily. But if you actually think quite deeply about role modeling the way that you're talking about it, it's showing people how to behave. And as we said earlier, by showing people how to behave, you actually do that cultural transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really like that. So Amy, now we get to the three questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
All right. Well, I gave you Likeable Badass already. And I'm going to give you another one that you may have heard before, but it's Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez from 2019, actually. I think she's got a new book coming out soon. But do you remember the book Freakonomics by Steve Dubner and Stephen Levitt in 2005? I just love that kind of stuff of like behavioral science, data, and, you know, understanding the world differently with different kinds of data. And so Invisible Women is almost, it's like a Freakonomics, but it's bringing data about women to the forefront. And it's quite illuminating, quite disturbing. It's really a fantastic read to understand this concept of the default male and how we need to work pretty darn hard to overcome the concept of the default male.
Yeah, I think I'm very informed by that in my work in terms of default men in leadership. So Amy,
yeah, I mean, like, it talks about bathrooms and
and
body armor and health
and heating in offices.
Yeah.
Offices too cold, run too cold for female bodies. So Amy, you know, my work is very much aimed at emerging leaders, so leaders from diverse identities, diverse backgrounds, underrepresented minorities, but really anyone who's emerging and really has an ambition to lead, whether it's to land their dream leadership role, to keep it, because landing and keeping, not always the same thing, or to create their dream leadership role. What three tips do you have for emerging leaders in terms of their leadership?
The first is speak up. So this was a piece of advice that I got early on in my career from one of these male role models. And he told me, Amy, you never speak up in meetings, and I know that you have a lot to contribute. And so speak up more. And that was so helpful to me. As a shy, introverted only child, I was not prone to speak my mind, to speak up. And I think that's often true of women, of, you know, certain cultures, etc. And it's really super important that you do speak up. So what I did was I made sure that in every meeting I said something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that was really painful. And it, you know, took me maybe the whole meeting to figure out what in the world I was going to say. and getting over the fact that maybe I might even be kind of repeating something somebody said, or, mm-hmm. you know, more likely it was probably me saying something that I figured everybody already knew. That was usually the situation. And of course, they didn't actually already know it. But that's what I had to get over in my mind, is like, okay, I'm going to say this thing, even though probably everybody already knows it anyway, but I'm just going to say it because I need to say something. And that was a practice that I put into place and continue to do so. Along those lines, I also had, especially as I kind of started to move up, because then I needed to not just speak up, but I really needed to insert myself more, and I needed to respond and so on. And I'm a slow responder as well. You know, it takes me a while to get the thought process and then the out of my mouth. And a lot of people are very quick, you know, like Meg is super quick to be able to respond. And so I built a, you know, kind of an alliance with Meg and with others where they would give me a few beats to answer before they jumped in, because it was natural for them to jump in, and it was really unnatural for me to jump in. So they'd give me a bit of time so that I could do my process and get my words out, and that was super helpful as well. So kind of, you know, forming these sorts of alliances and support of others, whether, you know, whether they're in the same kind of camp as you or not even, I think is really important. Another, and I might have more than three.
Go for it.
Another is managing your visibility and diversifying sponsors and allies. I can't say that I always did that super well. I don't think I really did it consciously, and I should have. But making sure that your work doesn't get hidden, that others are talking about your work. And it's not so much about self-promotion per se, but making sure that others are feeling your value and are talking about your value. So that visibility, I think, is really important. And then the last one, you know, I talk a lot about kind of this service leadership and, you know, bringing value to others and giving to people more than taking and all that kind of stuff. And all of that is extremely important. But you need to balance that with not picking up the housework, right? So the work housework. So they're two very different things. You can be asked to do all of the, do you know what I mean by housework?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's who's taking the minutes? Who's organizing the birthday party?
Exactly.
Who's getting the gift?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So don't do those things. Mm. I mean, unless you truly love them. Like, I mean, yes. Some people just love it and that's fine.
Yeah.
But when I talk about giving and serving and all of that kind of stuff, it's not those things. It is about business value. It is about serving business needs and that sort of thing. It is not about doing the dirty work.
Lovely. So I'm going to repeat them back. It was speak up, build alliances, manage your visibility by demonstrating your value, and be in service, not to housework, not to emotional labor, but to business strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. So, Amy, we're living in heavy times in the world, but we all have to take care of ourselves. What do you do that brings you joy?
I love to be outside, outdoors. I grew up in the Northeast and it snowed and was crummy a lot. And I moved to California and became obsessed with the weather. So I love to run. I love to hike. I love to be near water. And I love to do that with, you know, small groups of friends, family, including my doggie and my son, who's now second to my dog because he's at college. So,
Amy Wilson, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.